action to find out what's happened. That's the purpose of that change. The parole and probation people under this format still have the obligation to do the entry into LEDS. They have the obligation to follow the person during probation or during parole. And, of course, as part of that, I've confirmed this with Liz Clausen and Bernd Fotz, during this process, they are continually updating the information anyway. If the parolee or probationary person is moving around, they're updating it, so you don't need to require the person to contact anyone. It's when they're released from parole or probation that you then would slip into the annual notification, and the state police can take on that role because they have a routine system for LEDS entry.
Thank you. Further discussion, comments? Reverend Bell.
I'd like to oppose the amendment, and I'll tell you why. The reason it's a nonspecific event is because we haven't made it a specific event. In other states' legislation, they say within 30 days of release, or they give a time frame to make it a specific event. And I particularly like the fact that they need to re-register when they get a new address. An individual could register and be long gone in a year's time, and I think part of the purpose of this bill to prevent additional offenses would be watered down if we only take that annual registration.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I would accept it as a friendly amendment. Shall provide the person's new address upon a change of address, and we'd have to work out the language, or annually, that it would at least be annually, but it definitely would have to happen when there was a new address. We weren't trying to scotch around that. We could take care of that language if that's the concept.
All right, so the concept is that at least annually or annually plus when the person moves.
Yes.
But we need to
30 days within, I think within Representative Bell's request, 30 days within.
Representative Mason.
Well, I can really appreciate on this, but what I see happening here is that you might want to do this, but you're basically going to have a whole series, every non-registrant, and there'll be a lot more non-registrants under this system than the old system. I don't believe it. Non-registrations tripped at a year, not just when you moved. Every non-registrant will have committed a Class C felony. So I think the effect of this is going to be, that's why I call the respect. The effect of this is going to be is to perhaps generate a substantial number of misdemeanors and felonies. Because it's all they've got to do is just let a year run, and if they fail to register, they've committed a felony or misdemeanor. Have I misread it?
No. You have not misread it. You have not misread it. All right, Representative Mason. So
quite different from just failing to register when you move.
So your point, Representative Mason, if I can paraphrase, is that it's that the act of moving itself perhaps ought to trigger the registration requirement. Failure to do so constituting an offense in and of itself, but the passing of a year without registering is not the same kind of event from the standpoint of culpability.
I don't, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I think that that's a significant point. I also think that the key to the enforcement is we want the registration to work. I don't care so much about making it a Class C felony if failure to register had crime was a felony and a Class A misdemeanor. Two options are there. One is to move down the offense to, say, a Class A misdemeanor if the offense that you didn't register for was a felony, and make it a Class B misdemeanor or a Class C misdemeanor if it was a misdemeanor offense and you didn't maintain your records. And then you've got a less onerous impact on the system, but you've got still got the teeth to the registration. And is yes, every year you need to register. You could also, I don't want to put the onus on the state police to write to these people every year and say, by the way, please register with us. But remember, this is...
I think you don't want to do that either.
Can I make one?
There's prosecutorial discretion that's going to apply here. The prosecutor, I think, isn't going to go after the person who kind of overlooked it. I don't think they're going to use a lot of resources. It depends on how bad the character is, I guess.
Representative Mason.
And on top of it, I think you also just fell over into, as I read the bill, as you strict liability crime. And I also think that if we want to keep this constitutional, we wanted this to be constitutional, you've got a fairly onerous system here. And again, you've made it strict liability just failing to register. And it's not failing to register for 5 years, folks. It's your whole life. That's.
Would you, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mannix.
I would. I think you could follow up on that by saying, all right, let's say failure to register it when you move is the Class A felony, Class A misdemeanor. If you don't make your annual registration, which is a standard requirement, have that be a violation.
Representative Edmondson.
Well, it's just more of an inquiry for the purpose of discussion, but what about other address changes, for example, driver's licenses and things like that? There's no, isn't there some coordination if we're concerned about people skipping?
Other states do have one.
You know,
we have not yet, but there is another.
A person might not want to register as a sex offender, but they may want to register to have their driver's license current.
So you have a little, like, marked on the back of your driver's license right there with needs glasses and organ donor.
Sex offender.
It's the computer system that when you go to register.
I mean, the software that could be, you know, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, I'm really, this is just a question. I just wondered if we might not have other ways of checking people to make sure, assure compliance. That's what the goal of this law should be.
I think that's the Kelly Clark supplemental bill approach, though.
Well, perhaps it is. Perhaps that's right.
I mean, Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit concerned about the conversation, and I guess it's because I feel that we're midway. I don't think we're making the whole step. I think what the committee's doing is sort of like stepping out into this river, and we have a ways to go. And when we really get there, we're going to be looking at the ultimate question being access to the registration information, the neighborhood association, the victim, the family that, you know, just has a concern. And I'm wondering then again on another committee, which, you know, the chair has served with me on in the past, Representative Sanceri, Representative Bell, Representative Johnson are on housing this time. There's fair housing, and you wonder how the landlord responds when the mail that's sticking out of your mailbox, you know, says sex offender registration annual renewal enclosed.
I think the point you make, Representative Allen, is very good, which is to say that we want the information on the registry for purposes of law enforcement and to protect against future. Future crimes. We don't, insofar as I can tell, we're not intending by this to use the Judge Baker approach of posting a sign around, and with all due respect, of posting a sign that follows this person for the rest of their life.
But I do think, and I just have to say that my impression is that that's next session's bill.
Or the Kelly Clark bill. Which we had talked about.
That's not the Kelly Clark bill.
Mr. Chair.
Reverend Sanceri.
Well, I want to cover every base that we can to, and I don't mind if it's difficult for these people because they've created a lot of difficulty in other people's lives. But I also have a concern that if we add too much or expand this too much, we've still got to get it through the Senate. We've got some other places to go with this bill. And I'm concerned that if we add too much, we may lose it. And what we have here now is, I think, important for the people in the state of Oregon to receive this.
Mr. Chairman?
So I just want to be careful with it.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Sanceri. I appreciate that. Representative Mannix?
Well, I'm going to bite the bullet and tell you what my amendment is. And my amendment is that you have to report your change of address within 30 days of the move, and with the language before about the Oregon State Police. And if you don't do that, you've got your Class C felony, Class A misdemeanor, as it is in the bill. Okay. Separately, you should make an annual report of your address to the state police, and if you fail to do that, that will be a violation, which isn't even a misdemeanor.
Call a question.
Okay, Representative Mannix has made a conceptual proposal for a two-tiered system under which failure to register within 30 days after you move gets you a class
Class C felony if the crime for which you were required to register was a felony, and in other words, the current language of that's okay. in there, the tough language, and Class A misdemeanor if the crime was a misdemeanor. That's in the bill right now, but use that language for the failure to report your change of address within 30 days.
And if you fail to report your address annually, then it's a violation.
Yes.
All right, Representative Mannix has moved that, and we have a question. The question has been called by Representative Edmondson. Is there objection to the proposed amendment? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr.
Council,
Chairman,
can you draft that for us? You've got the concept, and so you can draft that for purposes of the full committee consideration. What I'm trying to do is see if we can deal with this today, or do we need to come back and revisit? And
I assume Representative Mannix has words for me, so I trust that I can answer yes.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
We've got two more to follow up on the report you asked me to make. On line 25 of page 1, where it says a description of the offense, change that to a description of the methodology of the offense.
Okay.
And also on page 2, same kind of change, line 7, where it says description of the offense, change that to description of the methodology of the offense.
Okay.
That will help a bit with the data information entry that they need, a little more flexibility.
Representative Mannix has moved that we change the phrase description of the offense to description of the methodology of the offense on line 25, page 1, and line 7, page 2. Is there objection?
Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Finally, in our little discussion group, it was pointed out that there's no procedure in Section 5 of the bill, page 2, regarding who does the entry into LEDs. So, line 21, page 2, where it says, at the end of the sentence, if committed by an adult, period, there, insert, if the court so determines, meaning it's determined that this kind of registration is appropriate, the court shall enter into the law enforcement data system. It's going to be the same language as we've used before. The person's name and description, the description of the methodology of the offense, the address where, and the address where the person resides, period.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason.
My ways and means antennae are going. The court system, I suspect, doesn't want to do that. I think the court wants to just turn it over and have someone else do that.
Well, this is for
juveniles.
You're
talking FTE, aren't you?
Mr. Chairman, may I respond?
In my
discussion, I understood from talking to the what I'll call working group that we're talking juveniles. We're talking about them having to maintain some. They're actively involved with their juvenile. I'll call them. I don't know what the term is. Probation officers. They have access to the LEDs and they can punch it in. Well, the juvenile department, would that be more appropriate?
Yeah.
I've just got some nod. Thank you. The
I
juvenile
think that
department
what you want.
Shall enter into LEDs. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Is there further discussion?
On the bill?
No, on the most recent amendment. Representative Mannix, can you restate that?
Yes, it's going to be on page 2, line 21, insert a new sentence after adult. If the court so determines, the juvenile department shall enter into the law enforcement data system the person's name and description, the description of the methodology of the offense, and the address where the person resides.
Juvenile department.
Juvenile department.
Further discussion? Is there objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
One more, and this came out of our earlier discussion, paralleling 419.800. We've already had a motion to add compelling prostitution. There is also promoting prostitution as a separate crime. And I happen to agree with Representative Mason, we might as well call it pimping, but...
All right, you would put that into Section 1.
Yes.
Representative Mannix has moved the inclusion of promoting prostitution into Section 1. Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in looking at the statute of limitations bill, looking at the non-expungible offenses bill or statutes, which for the adult section start at 137.225. I also noted that compelling prostitution was not included. Criminal mistreatment is on the statute of limitations list, just for the committee's information, and is also on the non-expungible offenses list.
What is criminal mistreatment? No, I mean the definition. I mean the
I'm looking because I don't know. I don't know offhand. It must be a felony because it's in the felony section of the bill.
Right.
So that's about as. But until I read it, I have to tell you, it's a class C felony. And endangering welfare of a minor is the only other offense that I have found that appears on the other two and does not appear on this
and
one.
Is that a felony or misdemeanor?
That, I believe, is both.
Class A misdemeanor.
Is it a misdemeanor?
Class A misdemeanor. That includes permitting a person under 18 years of age to enter or remain in a place where unlawful activity, including controlled substances,
See, Representative Parks made an excellent point during the break, which was we need to be careful from a constitutional perspective, it seemed to him, and I agree, we need to be careful that we don't load this up with misdemeanors that are of an entirely different magnitude. I mean, what was the last offense that you just mentioned, the name of it?
Endangering
the welfare of a minor is something quite different than incest with a child victim. I'm sorry, it just is.
Includes selling tobacco to someone under
18. Allowing somebody to go into to a tavern. And our Eighth Amendment's concerns rear their heads again. So let's stand in control here and use a little bit of discretion. Let me say this.
I was just doing what I was told.
Was to compare
Council
the list.
Was just, reporting back as she'd been requested. I'm going to do this. I'm going to excuse the Republican members to go to caucus if they would like. I will send counsel down to get you before we vote on the full bill. If you need to leave now, you can. We're going to continue on until we get this wrapped up. Representative Bell.
Call the Speaker's office and tell them.
I had something I wanted to suggest when we got past this part. So.
Okay, we'll come back.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Mannix.
I'm still asking that we add, however, promoting prostitution, which happens to be a Class C felony, and is basically pimping. And I think we ought to keep track of those people.
And it is on the statute of limitations list.
Okay.
And I want to say, I want that 10-year minimum on the registration. That would be my position.
Suggesting that you want there to be a...
In six, where we're talking about...
Before you can get relief, you have to have been under
I would be in favor of making a minimum of 10 years of
registration. Before you can even apply to be...
Right.
All right. Thank you, Representative Parks. We will come get you before we have the final vote on the bill. And you might explain to the majority leader and the powers that be where we are. And if they think what they're doing is more important than what we're doing, they can come talk to me.
Or they can watch on television.
All right.
We should televise the caucus, Mr. Chairman.
No, you don't want to do that. That's very ugly stuff.
It's very ugly stuff.
We eat our young. Yes.
Did he make his motion?
Representative Sincero, you had a point you wanted to make.
Did Representative Mannix make a motion about compelling prostitution? I think that's the motion
that's
before the committee.
All right. Motion is to include compelling prostitution in Section 1.
Promoting prostitution.
Promoting prostitution, excuse me.
We already got compelled.
Is there objection? It's ordered.
Are you ready for six?
Representative Edmondson.
I'd move Section 6 of the staff measure summary titled Relief from Duty to Register with the additional provision that this relief not be available until 10 years have elapsed from the time of conviction.
Representative Edmondson moves what has been marked as Section 6 in the back of the packet, lines 1 through 13, with the conceptual addition that the relief not be available until a person has been under the registration statute for 10 years.
I
had 10 years from conviction.
Years from commission? Just give me a date. I mean, your options are commission. You said conviction?
I said conviction.
10 years from conviction.
However, perhaps I would, I'll say conviction. That's my motion. If there are others, maybe the committee wants to mull that over. But that was my motion.
Okay. Discussion. Representative Bauman.
No, well, that's okay. I mean, of all of the potential times to mark, it certainly has a kind of precision. It's going to be easy to measure from, and I'm concerned that we don't have that kind of precision in record keeping in other places along the track here.
It does create, however, the anomaly that where a sentence is longer than 10 years or probation, that relief would be immediately available and registration would never be required. However, I leave it to the court to determine appropriate cases.
Simply a request.
And that the court, were, you know, it may be appropriate if someone served their entire sentence and been rehabilitated, that they know that registration is not appropriate, and that would be something the court could determine.
And again, this just simply allows them into court to ask. Is there objection? Okay, so ordered.
Can I point out two things, please?
Counsel, point out two things.
Because we're going fast, and I think this is important. In looking at other relief from duty to register statutes, there were two standards of proof that other states used. One was clear and convincing, and one was preponderance of the evidence. The draft that is before you has clear and convincing, and I want the committee to note that.
Right.
The other thing that is in here is that the items that a juvenile court would look at in determining whether or not to register a juvenile are the same kinds of issues that the adult court would look at to determine whether or not the person should come off the list, with the hope of having some symmetry in what judges are doing. Okay. And people are being evaluated.
Both points well taken. The standard of evidence is clear and convincing, and that the standards for juveniles and adults will be the same. Or the issues that the
so
court will look at will be the
as
same.
A conceptual amendment?
No, she's pointing that out in Section 6.
I just wanted people to understand that that's...
So that's in Section 6 already.
It's in Section 6.
Okay. She's just pointing that out to us. All right. Counsel, any other unresolved issues?
Representative Mason raised a question earlier on about what happens if there is a... the list is released erroneously. Does the committee want to consider additional
sanctions? Mason would like to leave well enough alone.
Okay.
Representative Mason moves nothing.
Okay.
Is there objection to Representative Mason moving nothing? Representative Mason has made no motion. There is no objection to that. So we will. The court will. The court.
I can't find my
the chair
list,
will entertain a motion on House Bill 2407 as amended.
Do you want to go get Representative Parks?
Representative Mannix.
Representative
Bell had one other issue she wanted to revisit.
I want to propose a conceptual amendment for consideration that if initially requested, the victim or the parents or guardian of the victim be notified when an offender returns to their community.
Representative Bell has moved to a conceptual amendment that the victim or family... If the victim initially requests that the victim or the victim's family be notified when the offender comes back to the
This is almost a victim registration law that this imposes then. Victims would have to register their changes of address in order that the state police could successfully notify them.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Foss, could you come up for a minute? We have a question for you. The question is what the parole board currently does when they're getting ready to release an offender, whether they make some sort of notice to the victim.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're required to make notice, to give notice to victims in this case. They have to advise us, however, of their address, and they have to keep us current with respect to their address, and I think the same would apply here.
Would you be required to do that under this statute anyway?
No. Once a person is out under supervision, if that person changes address, we are not required to notify the victim or the representative of that change. Only when they're leaving the institution
are we
required to notify.
Representative Mannix.
While I support the concept that Representative Bell is pushing here, I think it is more than just what she's suggesting. For instance, I would want to see a much more comprehensive follow-through with the local sheriff, local police, the district attorney's office. I also see a real system-wide impact that if we're going to start tripping levers that require notification to go out, we already require that in terms of release from state supervision, that one of the considerations as to where the inmate's going to go is you have a list, as Mr. Fotz knows, of different things that have to be considered, and one of the factors is the victim's location. Another factor is potential revenge by the victim against the criminal. So I'm supportive of what you're suggesting. I don't think we can do it in this bill without getting into a lot of other, hitting some other trip levers that I think need to be addressed to make it work, and that may have some fiscal impact. And because of that, I'm going to have to unfortunately object and not support the amendment.
Counsel, Representative Edmondson.
Well, I just want to follow up, and I concur that I can see the aim where it's going. And I really wonder if this isn't more appropriately a question of victims' rights and relief, which bring into play a whole constellation of other concerns that are very valid. And I'm concerned about, as we start piling rocks on the legislative wagon, at what point the wheels fall off, and that this stone may be a little too heavy. So I would respectfully resist the amendment and hope that Representative Bell might want to reconsider.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bell.
This is the only wagon I saw available.
Although, Representative Bell, there's at least one, maybe two proposals in terms of victims' rights bills flying around that have notification provisions in them. But that being the case, you have an absolute right to propose the idea on this bill, and we would not stop you from doing that if you want to. Representative Bauman.
Yeah, I'm trying to track what it is we're doing with the testimony that we've heard from victims and the purposes that we've heard, and I think that this is really a valuable addition to the bill. I think that it moves us much closer to where my sense is that we're going, which is what are we going to do with this information? And the information that we've heard about victims is that this is not something that's easily dealt with. It's not something that goes away. I'm sure that it leaves people feeling vulnerable for the rest of their lives. One way to empower a victim is to let them know that the offender is in Poughkeepsie, or the offender is in, I mean, I suppose you should know if the offender lives two streets down, too. It would be nice not to be surprised.
I want to make a suggestion and see if the committee is open to it. And that would be that we give until Wednesday for Representative Bell to work with counsel and come up with some language for us to look at. Because I'm not immediately clear who would give the notice and the provision for making the request. On the other hand, I tend to kind of come down where Representative Bauman has, but I think it's a pretty good idea.
Mr. Chairman.
So I wanted to just test the waters on that. Representative Bell, this is your motion.
I just wanted to remind you that children are so afraid that these individuals will hurt their families that they'd rather commit suicide than let that be known. And if it comes out some other way, I would think that, precaution should be taken. Parents would want to know if that offender were back in town so they could protect that child.
Chairman.
Council has a helpful suggestion.
I'm also, there are going to be hundreds of bills filed today, and I can't believe there won't be one bill with the right relating clause on it. I support the concept. I also support Representative Bauman's suggestion, which we've not addressed in this bill. How do you work out a system for neighborhood notification? When I talked about trip levers, though, we should have something that's clearly put out and discussed in terms of this whole process, because registration is one thing. Notification to people is another. We have to consider, first of all, the whatever privacy rights still may exist for the individual involved, the criminal, and yes, they actually do have some rights out there somewhere. Yes, I said that, boy. Another consideration is civil liability. Who is liable if the notification is not made and then the victim is victimized again? There's all these trip levers that, or the neighborhood isn't advised and someone in the neighborhood is victimized. There's a lot to that I don't think in 2 days can be countenanced in this bill. This bill was a narrower focused bill about cleaning up the registration, extending it, and perfecting the process, I think, and I think we've made some good progress there. I can't see us being able to develop the much broader concept of victim or neighborhood notification in a short time.
Mr. Chairman.
Major Renfro, would you come up for just a minute, please? Representative Mason.
First of all, complimenting Representative Bell on getting a handle on one of our little tricks, which is conceptual amendments. Other committees don't do that, and we've kind of, it's been like catnip to us for years. And then secondly, I wonder what's the chair's pleasure on this. I don't want us to get into a quandary, and Representative Bell, I think you might want to defer.
Well, no, I appreciate the question, but heeding Representative Courtney's suggestion that we not manage our committee by the clock, this is an important bill. It's a good bill. We've made it a better bill, I believe, and there is at least a proposal that I think has some merit to it. I don't know whether it's doable or not. I have great respect for both of these gentlemen, and they have concerns. And so my tendency would be to say, let's take a deep breath and wait 48 hours, come back and look at it with some language, get some input from some folks, and then come back and deal with this issue in 48 hours, and either up or down on Representative Bell's motion. Once we have some language to look at, and at that point, perhaps we could get some testimony from Major Renfro from other interested parties as to, can this be done? What would it cost? Potential fiscal impact. I mean, Major Renfro, unfortunately, I think we would have to look to your agency to provide the notice to victims. I don't know that the Board of Parole would be an appropriate place to do that. And so we need your input on what it would take and is it doable and all of that. I happen to think that if it is doable, and if some of the issues that Representative Mannix have raised can be put to rest, I think it's a very good idea from the standpoint of what I understand the task force is trying to get at. So I neither want to rush through this and force a vote.